This hour is brought to you by Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
It's time for 5 on. Layla Rahimi and Marshall Harris bring you 5 topics on their minds today on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Well, we've peaked. I mean, that's it. Show's over. Everybody can go home.
The show is indeed not over because, well, 5 on is like probably my favorite segment. I go back and forth.
They're just questions we have. They're not necessarily the biggest questions. They're just questions.
5 on. Number 1.
Robbie just looks at me and is like, now do I play the thing? Like, you're just staring. I'm like, I got nothing.
Oh, now?
That was it.
Hey, we have questions. There's 5 of them. Here's the first one.
Yeah.
As you heard the big voice guy, Rick Party, say.
So exciting.
Number 1. Which player would you categorize as an unlikely hero this season on the Cubs roster?
Okay. It's obviously Daniel Palencia. Let's just think about his character arc on this midday time slot on The Score. Am I referring to a previous interview done with David Ross? Yes, I am. So when you consider that we all thought that Ryan Pressly was going to be the original closer this season, and then Daniel Palencia is like, hi, I throw 100, look at it go. And then all the hitters are like, yeah, that's all I'm doing with this because I can't hit it. So he ends up being the de facto closer and doing an excellent job. So for me, it is Daniel Palencia.
Okay, that's a good suggestion. I like that. You could have gone with Pomerantz. You could have gone probably with Flexen. There's
Cal
a lot
Pomflex.
Of people. Cal Pomflex. You could have gone with Cal Pomflex. You could have done that. You could have gone with Matthew Boyd, if we're being honest. These are all people who fall under the umbrella.
A lot of dads who stepped up here is really what I'm seeing.
But I think this one is pretty easy because, I'm sorry, you're telling me Carson Kelly slashing .268, .370, .508, and that's after the Cubs' other catcher, Miguel Amaya, went down and he's maintained?
Has anybody checked on him lately?
He's far along in his rehab. He's coming back soon.
I want an update every series. Like, not
every series,
but like every either homestand or road trip beginning.
Okay.
I want an update.
Here's the news on your guy. 11 home runs in 57 games. He hits a home run once every 20 plate appearances, basically. His 2.6 WAR is already the highest he's ever had in a decade of playing in the major leagues, and he's obviously not through a full season. He has been so good. He's worked with a pitching staff that has been great, especially after missing Shota Imanaga for almost 2 months and having Justin Steele out for the season. He's been the primary catcher. He was top 2 in All-Star voting. You could argue he should be headed to Truist Park in Atlanta for the All-Star game over Hunter Goodman of the Rockies, even though that's the Rockies. They had to have someone. Back to that conversation. It's Carson Kelly for me. He's the guy who has been an unlikely hero, because you couldn't have told me he was going to put up the type of production he has in an everyday role, because he wasn't even supposed to have an everyday role, but here he is.
So I have a player to throw it as well, and it seems crazy knowing how good he's been this year, but is PCA an unlikely hero? Because there's no way we thought he was going to be an MVP player to start this year. And for him to be basically behind Shohei Ohtani and how we stack up that MVP race, he's the unlikely hero, because I had no idea he was going to be this level of good.
No, I think based on the fact that, for example, this last homestand, the first day of it last week, so a week ago today, Jed Hoyer mentioned when we were discussing what's going on with Matt Shaw, Jed Hoyer pointed out PCA's numbers at this time last year. So, no, I don't think that's unreasonable at all. I think the expectation was similarly defined. Like, you knew who he was going to start. You knew who he was going to be in center. But as far as the performance and the value to the team and the WAR, yeah, all of that is fair to discuss.
Number 2.
In a piece published today by The Athletic, Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney detailed the rise of Cubs closer Daniel Palencia. Sharma and Mooney wrote the following towards the end of the article, quote, The Cubs are planning to look at the entire pitching market and get creative at the July 31 trade deadline, which means they aren't ruling out adding another closer. But the Cubs are in a position to think big because this dude throws 100, unquote. So here is the question. Is closer anywhere on your list of the Cubs' trade deadline needs?
No. No. What are you guys talking about? You traded for a closer last year. He's throwing 6 or 7 or whatever the case may be right now, and Ryan Pressly. You don't have enough draft capital for this. You don't have enough trade capital, prospect capital, farm. You feel me? No, I want you to focus on starting pitching and another bat. No, I don't even think bullpen is a concern. Mark this down in case something catastrophic occurs, and I'll be like, yeah, I was totally wrong. But at the same time, like right now as it stands, is that my biggest need? No.
All right, so let me start off by saying I do think bullpen is always going to be a concern because guys get hurt. And also Ben Brown, who I would love to see, and Kate Horton, who I might see in their bullpen come, you know, the end of the season, the playoffs. You might have to trade Ben Brown to get what you need as far as draft capital is concerned. Not draft capital, but asset capital.
NBA is on my mind at all times. Yeah. I'm always thinking draft capital because that's NBA lifestyle, but you knew what I meant. Prospect capital.
Yes, absolutely. Prospect capital, assets. So, no, it's not near the top. It's not number one. It's not number two. It's not number three. There's a lot of things that I'd like to see the Cubs improve on before they worry about specifically a closer. Bullpen arms, yes. Closer, not so much. Because when you start talking about what it costs to get an established closer, that's problematic. Now, if they want to go out and get, say, Aroldis Chapman, I'm not going to be opposed to it. But you better have answers as far as being able to hit left-handed elite starting pitching. You better have answers as far as who's starting games 1 through 4 in a playoff series before we talk anything about the very, very last outs, which from my standpoint could be solved by anyone from Daniel Palencia to Brad Keller to Porter Hodge. There are guys I could put at the back of the bullpen right now.
So as a bonus question, based on what you're saying here, let's say it's game 7 NLCS Cubs. It's the 9th inning. They're up 1. Do you trust Daniel Palencia in that situation right now?
Yep.
Unless he was used in the 8th inning because that's where the heart of the order was.
I think I agree with you guys. Daniel Palencia has been such a badass.
That's not like if it ain't broke for me right now, I'm not trying to fix it.
There are things broken.
is Javier Assad okay? Has anybody heard from him?
They're saying August.
Yeah. You feel me?
Yeah. I feel you.
Number 3.
5 On It continues with Raheemy and Harris with this question. White Sox right-hander Shane Smith is only the second player in history to make the All-Star team the year following his Rule 5 selection. Does this make the Gage Tater Workman saga of 2025 a little easier to stomach?
Gee, who wrote this question? Was it me? Yes, it was.
Was it directed at anyone, Layla?
And you know, there was a little Easter egg even in that question, aside from the Gage Tater Workman saga. It's the fact that the last Rule 5 person to do so in that circumstance is Odubel Herrera of the Phillies.
Wait, the last person
he
to do
was
what?
The All-Star. He was the first All-Star selected to the All-Star team after year following his Rule 5.
No, there's
selection.
Only been one guy who's done that, and that's Dan Uggla in 2006.
Odubel is in it.
He might have been an All-Star later, but it wasn't directly after the Rule 5 draft. Do you want me to look this up in this very moment? I can do that. I'm there's several reasons I'm very confident in this. The number one reason is because Odubel Herrera played for the Phillies. That's
yes,
number one.
The team you used to host the pre and post game show for.
Yes, Odubel Herrera was an All-Star 2016. He played a full major league season as he had to as a Rule 5 draft in 2015. I was very confident in that. Dan Uggla in 2006 is the only guy who did it. He had great numbers, batting over 300. I believe he had 13 home runs, 51 RBIs at the break. So he definitely deserved it. But as far as the Gage Tater Workman conversation is concerned, because when I heard that this might be a question, this might be a topic that we were going to be parsing through, if you will.
Parse rum,
if you will. You can
shout out Ian Happ.
Shout out to Ian Happ always. We go to Toledo, where currently Gage Tater Workman, in 37 games played, in 130 at-bats has 25 hits. That's a 192 average, a 295 on base, and a 369 slug. That's a 664 OPS in AAA. He really did make the most out of a great spring training. And the Gage Tater Workman saga has come to an end.
I just found it interesting that not only is Gage Tater Workman Rule 5, but that he played for the Cubs, then ends up playing for the White Sox and says he wants to beat the Cubs.
That's crazy.
And then somehow Rule 5 guy ends up the next year going to the All-Star game or after his selection. So for me, it was all a bunch of little knots that got tied up there.
I do have to give the White Sox credit. They're not afraid of a Rule 5 pick. They had three on the roster at one time.
Nor should they be.
Yeah, in their situation. What were you going to say, Ray?
I want to just put the label on the Gage Tater Workman saga as the sad summer of Gage Tater Workman. It's just the arc is just like, it's embarrassing when you lay it all out there. Like, I'm going to want to beat these Cubs. And then just he gone.
Are you kidding? I'm waiting for the Mike Tauchman story arc to continue with him getting traded back to the Cubs.
Sad summer of Tater, man.
It all kind of makes sense though, specifically because of something that the manager of the Cubs, Craig Counsell, said on Spiegel and Holmes a couple of weeks ago, and I thought about this. The man hates hash browns. Or sorry, tater tots. Tater tots.
Okay, that's kind of a tater tot.
That's like, no, but he hates tater tots.
Wait, does he hate, what if he hates tater tots but loves hash browns? Would that be weird?
Well, but his mom used to make him,
it's just a shape.
His mom used to make him eat tater tots. He did not like them. So did my man Tater really have a chance with the Cubs?
I'm going to be honest. I kind of agree with Craig. I don't hate tater tots, but I feel like when it comes to the Fry family, I feel like too mushy on the inside.
So from the Tater family, you're saying tater tots.
That just sounds like an oven wasn't preheated.
No, but like, it's still, the inside is still a little mushy, and if it's a little cold inside, it sucks. It's just like, I just like a regular fry or a curly fry.
Wait a minute. A tater tot's going to have a much less chance of being those things you described than other forms of potatoes.
Curly
they're
fries,
small.
Curly fries defy nature.
Yeah.
They are freaking nature, but like an Arby's curly fry, like that slaps.
What was the thing that somebody from Arby's kept texting us?
Potato cakes.
Yes.
They're back. I'm the one who told you. I went and tried them. I was like, they're just as good as I remember from high school working at Winn-Dixie when I used to go up the hill in the parking lot. Eat 5 for $5 with a side of potato cakes.
Arby's was like a top of the line sponsor for the Chicago street race. I saw it all on the broadcast.
Oh, yeah.
Right at the beginning of the race.
They have some sort of cheesesteak situation going on.
Yeah.
It was like the race for cheesesteak.
They have the meats, Layla. Cheesesteak, barbecue. They got all kinds of stuff over there.
Did you know what I also saw was on one of the pit crews? Do you know who the sponsor was? Speaking of Odubel Herrera.
Who was that?
Wawa.
Wawa.
I was like, oh, yeah.
It's no sheets, but it's good.
What?
Yeah,
do you like sheets more than Wawa?
It's a bad take.
Wait, I need an answer.
I like the hot food at sheets better than I like the cold stuff at Wawa. Yes. And they have fries. And they have fries. Back to the bring it full circle with the tater.
Oh my
god. They have fries at sheets. Wawa does not offer fries.
The Wawa Italian hoagie is elite.
It's all right. It used to be better. Yeah. That's my take.
Number four.
How did you feel seeing former White Sox Andrew Vaughn do this last night against the Dodgers in his first game as a Milwaukee Brewer?
And Vaughn sends it way back, and welcome to Milwaukee! How about that, Andrew Vaughn? Looking good in that Brewer uni. Bernie hits the slide. And Vaughn with a three-pointer into the bullpen.
Credit to MLB.com, but how did that home run make you guys feel?
Like changes of scenery benefit people? That's it. Unfortunately, if you're on the White Sox and you're Chris Getz, you're probably not getting top value for the players who were part of your previous playoff run, team, effort, whatever you want to call that past group that we all know that I'm referring to. That group, you're not going to get top dollar value for the trade because you knew you traded low. In fact, I'm pretty sure Andrew Vaughn was basically part of an exclamation point that occurred when it came to that trade. So for me, I think it's a good thing that a change of scenery is benefiting him. And it's a little bit like shades of what happened regarding Jake Berger. But in this case, the expectation in that trade wasn't even a statement making. So I don't necessarily mind it.
What do you mean? Aaron Savali's offered 0.1 in WAR since being acquired in that trade, where he's started four games and put up an 0-3 record and a 4.29 ERA. They got stuff for him.
Sometimes
a 1.619 whip.
Sometimes all you need are some innings, okay? And in my life, sometimes I just need some innings. So, you know,
outgetters, as Craig Council tells us.
Andrew Vaught was demoted previously, you know, so it's not even the same as Jake Berger.
Also, how I felt, though, was I felt like I was watching the end of Infinity War all over again because it felt inevitable, like Thanos at the end of that movie, and they should have gone for the head or something like that, because snap, here he is out here. Not only is he producing at the major league level in his first plate appearance for the Brewers, but the Cubs now got to deal with that. And every time he comes back to Chicago, he's probably going to have an extra chip on his shoulder. And now the Cubs got to deal with the White Sox former guy who did not live up to the billing.
The bigger concern is that the Cubs have to deal with a team who seems to get the most out of its players.
Yeah, that's fair. Freddie Peralta looked outstanding in shutting down the Dodgers last night. So, yeah, problem.
Number five. All right, so the fifth question on Five on It has just kind of become a life question or something that randomly popped into my brain. So I was home in Michigan last week, and you know, I'm laying in my childhood bed, and there's these decorative pillows that are there. So I get in the bed, I take these pillows, and I just throw them on the floor because once, like, they're so uncomfortable, you can't lay on it, and also they're just way too big. And then when I put them back, my mom's like, oh, did you put the pillows back on the bed? You know, when you make your bed. So I don't understand them, and the question is, what's the point of a decorative pillow if you can't use it to be comfortable and it's just huge and in the way?
You know they're also called throw pillows, right? So you kind of made a point there.
What's the point if I'm just going to throw it away? Like, what's the point of it being there?
So in the pre-show meeting, I was like, I don't have that many pillows, and then I counted eight that are on my bed right now. I'm not kidding. That's just the bed.
Like, why is it part of the bed making process to put these things you're literally just going to throw right on the ground?
I think my issue is the pillows that I sleep on, and like I do the weekly washing of sheets and whatnot, and I have certain pillowcases that I only hand wash and I air dry and all that.
Sounds like a lot of work.
Right. Yes, but those are not the ones you want to see immediately. Those are the ones you sleep on. Like, yeah. So then you're putting pillows in front of those pillows. So then what are you doing? And that's where the throw pillow, aka decorative pillow, comes into play.
Let me just tell y'all
something. And then like one just looks weird because it's like, wait, no, like, no.
So what's the appropriate number? How did you get to eight is the question, Layla. How did you get to eight?
It's too many pillows.
Because there's two on either side. And then there's an extra one that I actually sleep on that's like memory foam. And then I had two others that were decorative. And then I had the little one in the front that looks like a hot dog. And then I had another pillow from a VH1 party that I stole back at South by Southwest a few years ago. So then I put a cover on that, but I still like the VH1 pillow. So then I ended up with eight.
So one of eight of practical sleep on it use.
Don't worry about that. But it would look so weird if there was only just one pillow on there.
Now I have four pillows. They're all for sleep usage. My four pillows. I have no decorative pillows, but when I go home and I go into my room where I sleep, there's probably eight, maybe 10 decorative pillows. And I got to be like, I got to remember how to put these back on when I get up. And one time I was so tired, I was like, I just need a nap. I went upstairs and my mom caught me and one of the decorative pillows was still on the bed. And that's the one I was sleeping on because I just didn't take them all off because I was just taking a nap. And she lit into me like, you do not sleep on the decorative pillows. That's not what they're there for. They're for decoration.
Go mess it up, man.
And I was like, this laying is
ridiculous. On it, you're going to get it all
fine.
They're there to hide the pillows that you really use, is the thing.
Yeah, so one of the comments on the Twitch line is like, keyword decorative. So that's why it's a decorative pillow. But like, how much are they really tying the room together, are these pillows?
In my living room, I have two big decorative pillows on the couch. Then I have two smaller accent pillows and then like a center. And then I have another pillow under the chair. So I'm up to a lot of decorative pillows.
I have a decorative pillow, or a throw pillow, I guess is what it is, on my couch. And I use that thing like a pillow when I sleep and take a nap on the couch.
Your neck is in shambles all the time. Those pillows suck.
We haven't solved anything. Like, I might just get another pillow, actually.
Please don't.
It's Amazon Prime Day.
To commemorate this discussion.
Please don't. It is prime days, but don't.
Oh, it is prime day. Ooh.
I just change out the slip covers, okay? It's a lot easier. It doesn't require as much space.
No. Just no.
Now I'm like pondering the life decisions I've made regarding throw pillow, toss pillow purchasing.